Welcome everyone to RTS Masterminds. My name is Balin Martin. I'm a lead systems designer at Grimlore Games. Previously worked on the Total War Warhammer series, Halo Wars 2, and Age of Mythology as well. Brandon, a quick intro from yourself.
And I'm Brandon Castile. I'm the lead designer on Tempest Rising at Slipgate Ironworks. And I've also have a long-term blog that I've been doing since like 2014, where I write about RTS design. And together, we are the RTS Masterminds podcast.
That's right.
And Balin, we're here today to discuss a new early access RTS called Godsworn. I'm excited to get going. You want to start us off?
Sure. I think one of the very interesting pieces of information about this is that the developers, Thunder Oak Interactive, they're two people. That's it. It's a couple making this game. And
that honestly blows me away. Like, the quality of two people have been able to put out is just astounding to me.
And right now it's in an early access state, so, you know, there's still quite a bunch of stuff that will be added to it, but just the fact that an RTS game is possible to make with two people and at a reasonably high polish level too. Like, this is full-on AA quality, I would say.
Well, and according to them, the launch went really well for them. They're really happy with how the game's performing, which is nice to have a good, positive, kind of feel-good, upbeat RTS story after we had some kind of high-profile stumble situations with a couple of other RTS recently. So it's nice to me to see some positivity out there in the RTS space. And I think for developers and players, it's been a good experience to watch this thing do well for itself.
Yeah, for sure. So let's talk about the game itself a little bit. So there's essentially two factions in the game right now. They're sort of covering the Baltic zone of the globe, and the Northern Crusades essentially is their whole basis of the theme. The game has a mythological basis at the same time. So yeah, mixing fantasy and history together into a complete package, sort of like how Age of Mythology does. But this game is doing things a little bit differently. So unlike, let's say, Age of Mythology, which removes the deities from the direct engagements. They are not on the battlefield. Here they are. You literally worship them with your faction, and they're your sole hero. You choose them before you start, and each faction essentially has a bunch of heroes that you can pre-pick.
Yeah, so in Godsworn, the hero is pretty much a sub-faction. So like you said, they have two factions. I think they call them the Baltics and the Order faction. Is that correct? I know the Crusade faction is called Order, but off the top of my head, I don't remember what the other ones are called. I think they were referring to them as the Baltic faction.
You got me good, actually.
Each hero, like I said, represents a kind of spin on the same core faction. So the Baltics faction has three gods right now, and then the Order only has one at the moment. I've been impressed because I think it's a really good way to reuse content. They found some really creative ways to get a lot of mileage out of their systems.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about their core systems. How do these heroes work? Well, first off, you've got these neutral creep clamps on the map where you can then rescue villagers, which then join your economy. So you have this incentive with your hero to go out, not only for just the level ups, which make them more powerful, but also for economic purposes. You can also find resources scattered around the map like that, protected by bandits and whatnot. You build up a bit of an army to escort your hero around you. You farm these creep camps, you gain experience, your hero gets to level up, and then choose new abilities, which can be either tied to the hero or be global. Do you have some form of opinion on these?
So one thing I think as the game develops, I would like to see a little more clarity on is the experience system. I mean, you can tell that fighting the creep camps gives you experience, engaging in combat does, but I would like to see a little more, like maybe UI around that. The actual upgrades I think are really neat. I don't know that I've played enough to make heads or tails of the balance at this point, but it is really cool to be able to go into the tech tree and make meaningful choices between. So one of their goddesses, one of her big focuses is mind control and kind of misdirection, and you're making choices between, you know, like stunning abilities which can help you do the mind control or like damage dealing, and I think it actually, to me as a player, I feel like I'm making choices that will affect, like really clearly affect what I'm going to be doing in the game over the next minute or two. So far I've really liked the choice system. I think it does start to break down a little bit toward the later portions of the game. So in the beginning, you're making what feels like distinct choices, but then as you get kind of down at the bottom of the tech tree, all of a sudden you can go back up and make the choices again that you had already made and kind of fill in the corners a little bit.
Yeah, you pick the order
The
that you get these powers in. You don't get you're not gonna leave out any of them eventually. Like once you reach the top level, you have all the abilities.
right. Yeah, so you at the beginning it feels like you're making distinct, like mutually exclusive choices, but then by the end you're kind of filling in everything. And I feel like toward the end I lose a little bit of that distinctness because the playstyle sort of homogenizes the further on you get in the game. Because again, there's things that you decided not to get earlier, you're getting later. But in the early stages of the game, I think there's a lot of interesting choices that they've brought into the game with what abilities you're picking.
Yeah, I actually want to point to Spellforce 3 because it works with the exact same system for the most part, with the differences being that you got a way more complex skill tree there. So you can branch in different ways. It's not quite an ARPG in terms of the hero management, but it's somewhere in between what we see in Godsworn and what you see in an actual ARPG. So because of that, you get all these choices, and you know, you'll be picking most of the key stuff by the time you reach the max level in that game too, but you get a lot of stuff that you cannot pick because you simply don't have the skill points available for it. So I think that could be a point of learning for Godsworn as well. And in the early access, this is fairly simple to still change, to simply give fewer points than what could be possible. To own.
No, I think that is really interesting. We want to talk about, so one thing that I think is really neat about the game is it's kind of bridging the gap a little bit with some of these, I was going to say 4X ERTS, but I'm not sure if that's fair. It reminds me a little bit anyway of games like Battle Realms or even more recently Northgard, where you aren't training worker units. As you said earlier on, you can find them on the map and save them from the creep camps and they'll join you, but also you gain them over time. And I think if I'm not mistaken, how it works is you have kind of like a baseline rate at which you gain new worshippers. And this can be affected by having empty houses, because I think the more houses you have on the map, the bigger delta there is between your current and maximum population cap, the faster you will get worshippers, which is also a little bit of I think an attempt at a comeback mechanic, because this gives you more population. If you've lost a lot, you start to kind of regain it faster. I don't think it's a strong one, but I think that it might have a slight tendency toward that sort of comeback mechanic direction. And I think as a core RTS mechanic, it actually works fairly well. Because, and this is something else that I really like, while your worshippers aren't harvesting or building something, they are gaining their each base is a shrine in it, and your worshippers worship around the shrine, and they generate a resource that you can spend on some upgrades and some units, a faith, or
Yeah,
do
it's
they call
faith.
it faith? So that actually makes the entire concept of an idol worker in this game very interesting. Because idol workers aren't a bad thing, they're actually helping you. And you want to have a decent number of them, especially with some of the characters that are kind of more faith driven. It creates a really interesting dynamic where you're trying to, like, how many worshipers can I keep around my shrine instead of sending them out to do other things, because you wanted to generate all this faith that you can spend on upgrades and powerful units.
Yes, now for the benefit of people who haven't played yet, the shrine is actually your main base at the same time. So that's the one that produces your workers continuously by itself. It doesn't cost anything to produce the workers. They just come in over time. And like you said, the houses kind of help determine the rate of it. You can also rescue them from the creep camps. But if your workers do go idle, you can control your workers, by the way. But if they do go idle, they will return to gather faith. The
Right,
other
that's a good
buildings
point.
are slot based, so you can assign a certain number of workers to them, and then they'll gather resources nearby, depending on what it is. So, like a logging camp will have you gather wood.
Yeah, how do you feel about that? Because that was something that initially I struggled with, but after I played for a while, I just started kind of realizing that I needed to build more of them. I think it pushes you out on the map,
Yeah.
because one of the other resources is wealth. And that one, I think, is one of the more constrained resources. And you really have to go get, like, capture a couple of these mines and get people on them to get a decent wealth income.
Yeah, money doesn't grow on money trees unless you have a literal global power to get a money tree. That's a thing.
They do have some fun powers in the game. And they're all, like, mythologically inspired. I think I read that they were doing research with, like, historians and stuff, or trying to think of the title there. Like, mythological researchers.
Yes. Oh, and the last resource we didn't mention is food.
Yeah, so
That
it's
has many
food,
sources.
lumber, wealth, and faith, right?
Yeah, but food you can gather in from multiple sources. So there's berry bushes, there's farms, there's huntables. So yeah, kind of the Age of Empires package there. But the worker system, do I struggle with it? No. Because it's basically Spellforce, right? The difference between Spellforce 3 and Godsworn is that you do not get extra bases, so you don't get to expand, you don't get to pump up those villager numbers like that with your map control. No. You just have the one base, it's giving you a baseline. The villagers are still very easily killable, but here you can command them, unlike in Spellforce 3. So, in some ways, I think it's give and take between what I like better between these two games, but I certainly think it's interesting, and I love that you can control it. That's a good upgrade over the Spellforce system.
Well, and talking about kind of gameplay lineage, so you've mentioned Spellforce, we've mentioned Age of Empires. I think another good reference point would be Warcraft 3. I think, in terms of, like, game feel, I think it's fair to say that Godsworn kind of borrows from Age of Empires a little bit, from Warcraft 3 a little bit, and then shares some common DNA with Spellforce
Yes.
3 as well.
Yeah, those are
But
the
I
main
just felt
points for
like
sure.
Yeah, I just felt like it was good to mention Warcraft 3 in particular. There's kind of a general Warcraft 3 style, kind of a vibe going on with
Sure,
the
and
game.
you could say the same thing about Spellforce. So when I'm comparing something to Spellforce, it's inadvertently comparing to Warcraft as well.
Yeah, fair enough. And I will apologize if anyone catches me coughing. I'm trying to mute while I'm going, but I'm getting over a touch of COVID, so I apologize if any coughs make it into the audio. All right, so we've kind of done some high level, like, systems overview stuff. We talked a little bit about the factions. It is kind of neat to me that they managed to get out two factions. In the earlier betas that they released for various Steam events, they only had the one faction, the Baltics faction, with two of their gods. Meneth, who is a kind of stealth assassin sort of guy, and the other one is Saul, Saule,
Yes.
who's like the sun god. She has a lot of healing and like direct damage as well.
Yeah, and she's also the one with the money tree. I like that.
And the money tree.
It synergizes very well with the dragons too, which such an interesting unit, that one. But anyway, carry on.
And then their order faction, they right now, as I said, they only have one, and they call them archangels or angels, I think, for the order faction. They're based, as you said, on the Northern Crusade. And the idea is, these angels are invading this land, trying to force the people to not worship their gods, who are literally walking among them, and instead worship, I don't know if it says God specifically, but like their religion. So that's kind of the story that we've got going on right now with the game. And the campaign right now is five missions. I've done, I think, the first three of them so far.
I've personally mostly looked at multiplayer, but I did play both of the factions. Now, at their core, they're pretty similar. So they all gather the resources the exact same way, but there's a little bit of differences. So, for example, the Baltics, as I recall, cannot make a farm in the first tech tier, whereas the Crusade crew can. So there's these little differences. The actual unit roster is where they truly differ, however. So you got a different set of military buildings, and you do get sort of the same roles covered. So you get your basic footmen infantry on both sides, you get your javelin hurlers or archers on both sides, and they're really just different in terms of their character, but not so much in terms of their role.
Yeah, and then it's the tier two and tier three, and it's to start diverging more and
Yes.
more. Where with the Baltics faction, you have a witch that does poison, and you have another one that does healing, and then you have the Pukis, which you mentioned is a dragon. And when it's not in combat, it goes around looking for money to get you to generate wealth for you. And then the Order faction, they have a catapult at tier three, and then they have two priests.
Yeah, one of them
Trying to
does
remember. Do you
fire
ever?
damage, as I recall.
Yeah.
The other
Yeah,
one I
that's correct.
forget.
I think he's healing as well,
Think
but my
so.
recollection is that the healing has different character between the two factions.
Yeah, well, they have Griffin riders as well.
Yes.
And knights. Of course they have knights.
Yeah, and I believe they're adding additional units to the Order faction in particular. One of their buildings, the blacksmith, currently only produces the catapults. And I believe they said that they're adding a couple more units,
Yes.
including an additional workshop unit.
There is a little bit of fortification gameplay, of course. Like, the game is not so much about expanding in terms of building new bases because you can't do that, but you do want to go out there to get extra resources. I think you mentioned this before. That's especially important for the wealth resource, which is around all sorts of metal mines. To capture those locations, you can build walls to fortify, you can build towers, and there's an actual hill fortress kind of fortification structure.
That's, and I think that is unique to the Order faction. I don't think the Baltics has a comparable big fortress, right?
I think not, yeah.
So yeah, some neat little asymmetries there that I think will increasingly diverge over time. Another thing we should talk about is abilities. So Godsworn is fairly light on active abilities on individual units. They try to keep most, but not all, of their active abilities on their heroes. And in fact, even with the heroes, a lot of them are global spells.
Yes.
So you'll unlock through your tech progression, you'll unlock spells, and in some cases it'll pop the spell onto the hero. And in many cases, they're unique to the hero, these spells, but they will instead be available via a like a top bar menu, and are used globally.
But whether it's
now,
on
when
the
your
hero
hero,
or not, it will cost resources. So that is, I think, an important little detail. It's really just about how you cast it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And whether it's anchored to a certain radius around where your hero currently is or not. So one thing that is a common criticism of hero-centric gameplay is that it kind of forces combat to be these larger armies that are centered around the hero. I think, in my experience, because of some of the faster units in the game, you can get away with strikes without using your hero, especially if you're not coming up against the enemy's main force. But how do you feel about what Godsworn does in that regard?
Well,
About kind of
look, the
dividing your
workers
attention
are
on the map.
made of paper, okay? And your replenishment rate is completely dependent on your one single base that you have. So losing a worker is a bit of a disaster. If you can split off a unit or five and just go raiding, and pick off these units that are scattered out on the map in order to claim more resource spots, you can really go to town like that and hurt the other guy. So I'm not particularly worried about the core fights being hero-centric. I think these hero-based games need to do their hero-based gameplay, and that's fine. So I believe that there's a branch of RTS here that has a valid place to exist, and it's okay to have an RTS that is a little bit more deathbally if it's focused on these cool heroes, and the fantasy is about making them more powerful and giving them more friends to help.
Yeah, I like that. Okay, so we've kind of hit a lot of the big things. We've talked briefly about the campaign. We've talked a lot about the gameplay systems.
Hold on a second. You gotta answer this same question as well, though. I'm really curious about your stance of, do you
fair
favor
enough.
These?
What's
your
so,
sense on the heroes, essentially?
So I like how they did the heroes. The heroes are strong, but not really overwhelming. The Archangel hero is really annoying on his own, and he does a lot of unit summoning. His sub-faction does a lot of unit summoning, so he can get these extra bits of units in. Even during combat, you can summon them in, which is interesting. I do like playing as the Order faction. I find that playstyle a lot of fun. Plus the knights, like I said, they're kind of a beefy, fast unit that I think is decent for harassment. Because of how the workers respawn, I have found that until you get in and start actually killing infrastructure, losing workers is annoying, and it probably does actually put you behind. But what I found playing so far is I feel like it's a lot of like slugfests. You know, you take my army out, I take your army out, and we can kind of punch each other back and forth for a little bit until somebody gets a good gap, and then you can get in and start taking out some of their infrastructure, which is harder to recover from than losing a couple of workers. So far, not having done a tremendous amount of PvP, I have found what I've done fairly enjoyable because it kind of plays it. I like that sort of going back and forth feeling, where I feel like I've got to work really hard to close out the match. And I don't feel like in the games that I've played, there's often a really, really long period of time where I've already lost and I'm just waiting until they can, you know, finally take me out. I feel like a lot of it's like, okay, I'm coming up into their base and trying to take some of their stuff out. Oh, you know, my army got mostly killed off, but here's my next army's halfway out the door, so I'm remaxing again. I've enjoyed that. The big hurdle for me was kind of being forced to go wide instead of deep with economy. I tend to like to build a deep economy, Because it's easier to defend, and like this game, because they have the fixed worker slots, it really doesn't allow you to do that. It forces
No.
you to go wide.
There's a bunch of little upgrades that give you like an extra slot or an extra resource returned per trip, but it only goes so far.
Right, it kind of plays with the edges of it. And in fact, I think some of the those are sub-faction specific, and some of the sub-factions don't get those. I cannot remember her name off the top of my head, but the new god they introduced, the goddess they introduced in early access, who's focused on kind of like mind control. I don't think she gets that upgrade, or if she does, she doesn't get it until much later.
I actually played her today just to remind myself about everything she does, and yes, she does have that.
Oh, she does. Okay. I could have sworn there was one that didn't get that, or they got it later or something. But
Potentially.
yeah, it's
Admittedly, I'm only following on the outskirts of the game, so.
but yeah, overall, really, really solid impression. It's beautiful too. It's stylized, but it kind of has its own color palette and its own kind of take on the stylization
It's
that
readable
I think
and
makes it
charming,
fairly,
right?
fairly distinctive.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I
I think
kind of
charming.
found it's very easy to read the battlefield. Like, the units are recognizable, and even though it's
Yeah, they do.
stylized, it's kind of fitting in its own little world, and the buildings and the units don't look like they belong in a different universe either. So the team definitely did a great
Yeah,
job there.
it favors Warcraft 3 slightly, but I think in a way that they've managed to kind of create their own visual identity. And I think that comes down both to the amount of exaggeration. Like Godsworn is stylized, but they don't have units with shoulder pads that are, as big as a person. Like Samwise liked to do in Warcraft 3.
Yeah, and you know what? I like the UI a lot. It's very sleek. Admittedly, it does make you look in all four corners, which is a lot of gymnastics for your eyes. But yeah, other than that, I think it's quite polished. Another area I think to bring up there is the grid, the command grid, and like the building placement stuff. There are actually four rows, but looking at my keyboard, I only have three rows. Don't know about you guys, but that doesn't quite align. I love for that to be three rows and go a little bit deeper in the keyboard. And the other thing was that the mini map is kind of like weirdly cut off. But other than that, everything's very functional and beautiful. So, I feel like they're 90% of the way there with the UI.
Yeah, they've done overall, they've done a really polished job. And I think it deserves saying again that they have created a product which the people who are playing it and have purchased it all seem really, really happy with. It's been a really positive experience all around the game so far. And that could be that they're kind of focusing on like an enthusiast segment of players who are all very happy with what they're getting, so that you don't get a lot of the same kind of grousing that happens when you have a larger community. But yeah, it's been remarkably positive all throughout.
You know what?
Like in Discord and Steam even has been remarkably positive so far.
I will say self-publishing is extremely difficult. So for a potential Godsworn 2, I love for this team to consider some kind of publishing deal, right? So that it can reach a little bit more players. Because considering that it's literally two people handling everything, everything functions. There's a following. There's people actively playing, and a good amount of reviews as well. Like already 319, I'm looking at it right now, and
Nice.
yeah, that's not bad for just a few weeks of activity. It's not even been out for a month. For an early access mini RTS like this, that's super impressive. Keep it up.
Yeah, honestly, great job to the team. Thunder Oak Interactive. minds. They
Oh, and the ratings are 94%, like a few more percent, and it's overwhelmingly positive. Nearly there.
yeah, it's wild. But yeah, so it is an early access game. Right now they've got the two factions. They've got co-op and custom games. I don't believe they have matchmaking right now.
No, but they do have multiplayer.
Yeah, custom through their custom game lobby system. And I think there's a lot of people doing the co-op stuff. And they're planning on releasing additional gods for both of their factions.
I even heard there's
And
a
I
third
think
faction coming. Is that right? Do I
I
misremember?
can't confirm or deny. I don't know. All I remember is that they were planning on releasing, I believe at this point, three additional gods. I think it was two for the Baltics and a second one for the Order, is what they currently have planned.
All right, well, we'll definitely leave the link to the game in the description. Do you have any final thoughts that you want to share?
I think what I just said were probably my final thoughts.
Yeah, that sounds good. I've done much of the same. So I guess we'll tell everyone to check out our Patreon page if you want to support us. We'll be back again soon enough with another episode, where we'll be probably going over David Kim's new RTS.
Well, that one's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Stay tuned, everybody.
Stay tuned. See you on social media or Patreon or wherever we end up finding you. We're also on all of the podcast platforms, so maybe you want to listen on the go, you can do that. Thanks very much, and see you next time.
Yeah, thank you.